We're back to our five, maybe six, one God U.S. presidents. And as I said, the fact that there have been these important people who have had this one God perspective, as we do here, doesn't make it true in and of itself. But on the other hand, I think it's certainly interesting to learn that there were other people that our friends and neighbors around us would recognize who have had the same view of God as we do. I like that a lot. So this is a view of God. When we say one God, we mean like with emphasis on one, really one God. Not goofing with that, but this is really one God, and that's what we're looking at and thinking about. It is a, what we would say, non-orthodox perspective about God. And which would mean in this case non-Trinitarian. They had a view that God is just one individual. So we've made our way through all of the presidents we've discussed so far. A lot of important folks, a lot of wonderful things, I think. These were people that we learned were not just good people morally, not people who were great leaders, and certainly they were, but these are people also who were people of faith. And their faith was important to them. So I think that's tremendous. Today we're going to start, if we can, on part five. And this, we're going to talk about Millard Fillmore, okay? Not one of our more greatly known presidents. We've been talking about Adams and Jefferson and Adams and now Millard Fillmore, okay? But we're going to learn some interesting things about Millard Fillmore. And then the other is William Howard Taft. And so we'll just begin. The 13th president of the United States, Millard Fillmore. We'll have a short tutorial about this 13th president. 13th president lets us know one thing. He was before the great, the Civil War, wasn't he? Yeah, in fact, he was coming up on the Civil War and close to it, and that influenced his presidency a lot. It had a lot to do with what happened there. But anyway, we find that he was born on January the 7th, 1800. That's right when, if you'll remember, Thomas Jefferson was making his first run for the presidency. 1800, right along in there. He died in 1874 at the age of 74. And so he lived through the Civil War and beyond that some. He was born in a log cabin. He's one of those presidents, few presidents, was actually born in a log cabin. This is interesting. Like Lincoln, he was self-educated, pretty much. And but a brilliant man. He turned out to be a lawyer in New York. And then he ran for the U.S. Congress as a representative from New York, and he served four terms in that. Turned out to be the co-founder of the University of Buffalo. Not bad for a fellow who was self-educated, right? And then a lot of places, there are places named after him. Fillmore, New York is named after him, and I discovered there's a county in, I don't know, Wyoming, Montana. Anyway, that's named after Fillmore, and then there's other places. It turns out that Fillmore was our vice president under Zachary Taylor. Zachary Taylor, remember, was a great war hero. And Taylor won the presidency, and Fillmore became his vice president. However, unexpectedly, Zachary Taylor died. He died in 1851, about mid-year. And so, as it turns out, it turned out more to be Fillmore's presidency than it might have been Zachary Taylor's, because he died not long after taking the office. So Fillmore then was president from 1851 to 1853, and it was a difficult presidency. What was happening is we were making our way up close to the Civil War, actually. There was a lot of unrest in the country. No one knew that it was going to result in the Civil War, which it did about a decade or so after this. But there was so much unrest, they were concerned that the country was just going to break up. And there was going to be a major split, major division. It was over what? Of course, slavery in major part. And Fillmore was anti-slavery guy, but he became president in the midst of southern states with slavery locking horns with the northern states, and a lot of people in the northern states who were anti-slavery, and here he was caught in the middle. And that kind of defines his presidency. He didn't exactly know what to do. He was concerned. He didn't want to see the country breaking up, and it looked as though it might. So he tried to broker a deal somehow that that everybody could live with. The idea that the southern states could remain slave states, and they could retain their slaves, and in the northern states would not. And as I say, there's no question Fillmore himself was against slavery. He hated it. But he was just caught in the middle of the politics of it all. Anyway, it looked as though South Carolina, those people down there are always into something, and South Carolina was about to break with the Union during Fillmore's administration. And Fillmore refortified forces there, the Union forces there. There were no Southern forces at the time. And it kind of quelled the whole thing and so on. So this was Fillmore's problem. As he tried to broker a deal and work out something everybody would live with, it turns out, as is often the case, compromise winds up making everybody unhappy. And that's what happened during his term. The folks in the South didn't like what was happening, and the folks in the North didn't like what was happening. But at least the country held together. But about a decade later, the whole thing did come to a terrible point. And of course, there was a huge break and civil war. Anyway, back to Fillmore for a moment then. When his term ran out, his own party, the Whigs then, failed to renominate him, and he was eventually defeated the Whigs were defeated in any event by Franklin Pierce, another one of those presidents we don't know too much about, not a very super notable president, but Franklin Pierce came in after Fillmore and filled in some of that space leading up to the terrible Civil War. The religious background for Fillmore was that it's interesting. He was raised in a Methodist home. Okay. His father's background was a Presbyterian. And his mother's background was English dissenters. I don't know a lot about exactly what, there was a lot of English dissenting. So who these particular were people, I haven't searched it out, but if you want to search that out, let me know what you learn about it. But this is the part that comes to be of interest to us, and that is that Fillmore became a Unitarian with a little U. Remember, we talked about this in the opening session of this series, not big U, but little u, Unitarian, meaning the belief in one as God. Not only that there's one God, but there's only one individual who is that God. So this was the perspective of those people in that day that are Unitarians. Nowadays, what is being referred to often as Unitarian with a big U or UU, Unitarian Universal, it wouldn't be entirely recognizable to some of the folks back there. This has evolved into something very different, non-biblical. So our view about the one God, we would say, is a biblical view. I don't believe these things today that I believe, and I think you don't probably, believe this business about there being only one who is God, just because these guys believe that. In fact, I came to understand these matters quite some years ago, I think just by the kindness of God and the goodness of God to let me see it. And it's a scriptural issue. Came to understand it in that perspective. And it's only these many years later we come to understand, hey, there were some other folks that were seeing this and getting this. And that's not surprising. I think this business about who the one God of the universe is and how many is and all that, that doesn't belong to any individual. Actually, it belongs to all of humanity. He's the God of humanity, isn't he? Whoever they are, whenever they are, it doesn't matter. This is a matter that pertains to all people and of all times. But anyway, so here we are. Fillmore then became a Unitarian in 1831, about 20 years before he became president, thereabouts. And he was the founding member of a new Unitarian congregation, again with little U, we'll put it that way, in Buffalo, New York. We do not know a lot about his religious stance and so on. We do know he was certainly Unitarian. That tells us a great deal. But he was not a religious speaker, and he didn't do religious writing, so we don't have a lot to go on in those terms. We do know these things. We know that he was associated with the first Unitarian church in Buffalo, the one he helped to found, for a total of about 35 years. We do know that he took John Quincy Adams to church there in 1843. And all of you who were here last week for the thing about John Quincy Adams, wasn't that amazing? But so anyway, John Quincy Adams actually attended church with Fillmore there in Buffalo. And I thought that was it. And this is interesting too. He took President Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, to church there. Actually, he was president-elect when this happened, but he took him there to his Unitarian, little U, church in 1861. I thought that was interesting. We also do know this, that in while he was in Washington, which turned out to be a big part of his life, remember he spent four terms in Congress, and he also was president there, vice president there, and a lot of his life was focused on Washington. But anyway, while he was in Washington, D.C., he attended the first Unitarian church there. And that's the same church that was founded, we discussed this last week, by John Quincy Adams, who was our what president? Who remembers which president he was? Anyone? Sixth president of the United States. And a very strong one God Bible believing one God guy. So I like that. So that's what we kind of know about Fillmore in a nutshell, I suppose. But an interesting guy. And certainly, as I've said, you could sit down with Fillmore, President Fillmore, and you could begin to talk to him about our one God beliefs, and he would be instantly, he would know what you were referring to. He would be very interested, and you could talk with him probably at length about those issues. So I think that's wonderful. Our 27th president, William Howard Taft. Let's see what the story is on him then. He was born in 915 of 1857. So he was born about this time of the year in 1857. That would be just immediately before the Civil War, to get our perspective on that. And he died in 3/8 of 1930. So he lived to be 72 years old. He was a lawyer from Ohio. A jurist, he was a judge, and he loved the bench, he loved the law. And so anyway, he got involved in politics over time, and but he became the governor of the Philippines back when the Philippines were a possession of the United States of America. So that's interesting. So from 1901 to 1904, he was the governor of the Philippines. Then he was U.S. Secretary of War. That's what they called it in those days. Now we call it the Secretary of Defense. I guess that sounds better, doesn't it? Secretary of War, I don't know. But anyway, from 1904 to 1908. And so that was leading up to his running for and becoming the President of these United States in 1909. So I think that's fascinating. So he was president from 1909 to 1913. And then this is an interesting fact. This is the only time this has occurred in American history. After serving as president, he took a few years off and then was appointed, found his way to the Supreme Court as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court for a few years. In fact, probably about 9 years or so. So he was a Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court after he had been president. And I do believe, based on what I've been able to discern about the matter, that he was actually happier and prouder of his role in the as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court than he had been as President of the United States. Presidency is a rough business, isn't it? I've always said that anybody who would want to be the President of the United States isn't smart enough to be. It's a tough job. Who would want to do that? But anyway, so he was the only person in American history to have ever held both offices. Here's what we know about his religious life, and happily he wrote and said a bit more about his faith than what Fillmore had done, so we get a little better perspective from Howard Taft's religious life. He was raised by Unitarian parents in Ohio, so that's interesting. He just started out of that faith, the one God faith. And he was raised that way. I've wondered, his people, they were from Ohio. I wonder if perhaps his people had known or been connected with along the way the Wilsons. Some of you may be familiar with Benjamin Wilson, John Wilson, these great one God people from the Midwest who had started out earlier in the East had left there, the Wilsons' parents had, moved to the Midwest, and then these guys did some great things. If you have ever read the Emphatic Diaglot, that's Benjamin Wilson's work, and it's great translation of the Bible. Even to this day, it's still a great translation of the New Testament. Anyway, we find Taft saying this. He said, "My father and mother were Unitarians. My mother's mother was a Unitarian who followed Channing." Channing was a great one God minister. We have some of his writings, and they're really exciting. If you could read them, some of Channing's statements and teachings, you would say, hey, this is great. He's talking our language, and he is. And it's excellent. So anyway, Taft made a speech in 1917 in which he talked about his faith and some of these things, and I'll be quoting from it a couple of times here, including right there. Taft attended the All Souls Unitarian Church when he was in Washington, D.C., and that's the same church that was founded, we mentioned a moment ago, by John Quincy Adams. By the way, I threw this in. It's interesting to know that it wasn't just John Quincy Adams, but other founders of that church were John C. Calhoun. Some of you history-interested folks will know that. He was vice president for a spell and a great figure in American history. And Charles Bulfinch. You probably don't know that much about Charles Bulfinch, but he was actually the designer of the United States Capitol building. So when you look at the great Capitol building, there's certainly perhaps the greatest Capitol building in the world. Maybe I'm prejudiced, but anyway. Remember that actually a one God guy actually designed that superb and amazing building in Washington, D.C. Bulfinch, Charles Bulfinch. Here's what I'm learning a bit more with by the time we get to Taft. We talked in our very first session here about the whole business of Unitarians with a little U, one God believers, going all the way back to the Reformation. And we talked about the Polish Brethren, and we talked about the Racovian Catechism, and the development of all those things. Right on. Very biblical guys, very strong, very sure. But we also talked about that there were people, I think, of learning not knocking people of learning. I think learning, good learning, is good. But there were some people actually who were of a liberal bent, less biblical bent, and they were kind of out there too. They could see the reality, the goodness, the correctness of only one being God. We talked about some of those folks back in our very first session. By the way, this whole series is going to be available soon on Higher Ground Church's website. So keep that in mind. In fact, I think is not the case. The first two sessions are already there, and these remaining three sessions will be there before long. So if you didn't see the first session in particular, you might want to go back and take that in. Just bring up Higher Ground Church Nashville. HGCNashville.org, I suppose. But as you did have an element of tending to get more away from the Bible and more liberal, as we'd say, that's not us at all. We're not interested in that. But there was some there, and they could see the value of the Unitarian thing, the one God business. So many of these folks who were liberal aligned themselves with the one God. So, okay. But they brought some of their liberal tendencies with them. We don't like that at all. We're very scripturally oriented, of course. And we're not interested in picking your way through the Bible and say, I like this part, I don't like that part, I like this part. I don't like. No. Come on. This is a package deal. Okay. So with Taft, I'm not quite sure exactly where he was at in the development of all of this, and the liberal tendencies that were at work among some may have been affecting him some. This particular sense of inclusiveness and the universalism, the idea of universal, everybody's going to be saved in the end. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you think, what you believe, how you live. Doesn't matter. Everybody's going to be. Universalism. It's an interesting concept. We'll talk about that sometime, if you would like. And it's a very bad idea. It doesn't really work. But socially, they found that it was working out nicely because people thought, oh, them guys over there, the universalists, they don't think anybody's going to be lost, so they won't bother us. So the rest of the religious world and other people were at peace with them. So that's interesting. Carrying on then, quoting again from Taft's speech in 1917, which the speech actually was entitled The Religious Convictions of an American Citizen. So I thought that was pretty nice. Self-deprecating, if you will. He just called himself an American citizen. He's president of the United States and fixing to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And yet he says, this is my faith as an American citizen. So anyway, here's what he says, and this is of interest to us. He says the tendency of openness on the part of Unitarians is what he's talking about. Has modified the attitude of Orthodox churches toward Unitarians in a large degree. So there had been this, shall we say, ugliness. You know, the Orthodox folks didn't like people not being Orthodox. And even when it was these huge giants, leaders, great minds and great people, they still didn't like it, you know. But he says that the fact that we have been open on our part as Unitarians, that's, again, this is getting too much into that liberal vent to suit me, he said, has modified the attitude of Orthodox churches toward Unitarians in a large degree. It has promoted a spirit of tolerance and friendly cooperation. How exciting is that? Okay, that's fine. This was in that same speech in 1917. So that's kind of where we find Taft. He was definitely a one God guy, no question about that, and throughout his life, leaning a little too much in the liberal direction of things, which, by the way, eventually became what we nowadays call the, or some would call the UU movement. They call themselves that, so it's okay. But Unitarian Universalists, all the Universalists who said everybody's okay, they got together with the folks who really were Unitarian, meaning one God folks, who were tending to be liberal, And as a fact, then they formed in 1960s, maybe. I'll check the dates. They formed one organization. Nowadays, when you see this Unitarian word bandied around, has little to do with Unitarianism as we would understand it and believe it, but instead it would have to do with these rather liberal folks, which is kind of, you know, our cross to bear, I guess. We have to help educate our communities and our friends to realize that's not us, that's something else. And we're not with that at all. We're with the one God thing, but on a biblical, scriptural basis. Our faith is resting in the Word of God, not on all of this other stuff. Okay, so that's Taft. Now let's move on for a moment. Here is then possibly our sixth that I promised, our sixth one God U.S. president. The one that I said might be a surprise, because it was a surprise to me. And sure enough, it was Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president of the United States. And he was indeed one of the three most celebrated presidents, in my opinion, with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. I was mentioning in our opening session, I think, or at least in the session about Jefferson, that he was probably one of our two most celebrated. Well, I was leaving out Lincoln, of course, in my mind. So we should bring Lincoln in. Those three guys were the most celebrated, are the most celebrated presidents, I think, in U.S. history, which is demonstrated again by the fact that the three of them have these enormous edifices and memorials built in our nation's capital to them. The Washington Monument for George Washington, no matter where you go in any direction, you see that monument, and the idea was you're supposed to ask, what's that about? That's the founder of our country. That's in his memory. And then we had the Jefferson Memorial, which we took a look at and talked about time before last. And that was wonderful. And remember, we said that there is this whole building, this beautiful, fantastic building in our nation's capital, serves only the purpose of having a great statue of him and his words on the wall. How would you like for people to think so much of you, the words that you speak, that they would build such a building to you, to put your words up so that people of all nations and all time, as they come there, they would read what you said? This nation wanted people to read what Thomas Jefferson said. Well, what's exciting to us is we also read some of what he had to say about God, didn't we? And that's exciting. That's tremendous. Well, and then, of course, this one, the Lincoln Memorial, the third great memorial for presidents in our nation's capital. So it's fabulous. Continuing on then, how do we get this this connection then? What is the one God connection with Lincoln? And again, it's interesting. It brings us back to the Howard Taft speech and something he said. He said it was not always so. In other words, peaceful coexistence between Unitarian folks and the other folks out there in the Orthodox world. And we said Orthodoxy likes for everybody to be Orthodox. They don't like it when you're not. They're unhappy with that. Doesn't work for them. So, but anyway, he says it wasn't always that we had this peaceful coexistence here in our nation, in Washington, and so on. I have to tell you, we still don't have it all together, do we? As you will have noticed. But he said it was not always so. Jefferson, though a sincere student of the teachings of Jesus and a Unitarian, and we've studied him out there, was denounced as an atheist. We did find that. But untruthfully so, as we discovered. We know the contumely, insult, and mob violence to which Priestley was subjected in England. We talked about that in our earlier sessions. Franklin, the Adamses, and Fillmore were all Unitarians. But they were looked at askance. Lincoln, here's our connection. Lincoln, one of the most deeply religious men, was clearly Unitarian in his faith. Now that's interesting. Because as we see on our next screen, Lincoln was quite quiet about his faith. He didn't write about it. He was not a preacher. He didn't have a lot of writing or speaking about the issue of faith. Plus, he already had a divided nation. He was very busy just trying to hold the country together. And so So Lincoln didn't go in that direction. You don't find writings about his faith. But what we do find is, we do find Taft, who had been president, was fixing to be the head of the Supreme Court of the United States. I think he was a good guy, and he probably knew what he was talking about. But he says that Lincoln actually was a Unitarian, along with these other guys. He said, unquestionably. So that's interesting. We do know that Lincoln attended church with Fillmore, and at a Unitarian church. So that just in passing. But we don't have then direct words so much from Lincoln himself about the issue. That's the reason we say, well, I think probably he was, but we don't know for sure. So, and we have Taft saying he was one of us in regard to God. We do find this. We do find that, and this is just from Wikipedia, but it says Lincoln believed in God, and he certainly did, but some said he doubted the idea that Christ is God. Ha! Now, isn't that interesting? Okay. So that's of interest to us. We believe in God, but this whole business about Christ being God is strange to us. That's not us. And according to some sources we are learning, that's what people said that Lincoln also believed. He, in a written statement to Herndon, James W. Keyes made this. By the way, Herndon was Lincoln's associate, business partner, fellow attorney. And he did write a biography of Lincoln. But anyway, he said Lincoln believed in a creator of all things who had neither beginning nor end, who, possessing all power and wisdom, established a principle in obedience to which worlds move and are upheld, and animal and vegetable life came into existence. A reason Lincoln gave for his belief, it would have been more miraculous to have come about by chance, he says, than to have been created and arranged by some great thinking power. So he never doubts we have a creator. That's this testimony about Lincoln. But we find that Keyes goes on to say this. Keyes added that Lincoln once said, as to the Christian theory that Christ is God, or equal to the Creator, he said, that had better to be taken for granted. So he's saying, you just gotta say, well, I just believe that. Because he goes on to say, for by the test of reason, any kind of reasoning you can picture, all might become infidels on that subject. He said, if you're going to test it out, you can't go to the scriptures and really find that. There's no reason to believe that. So you just would have to take it, as some people now say, oh, just take it by faith. Well, what faith? What faith do you want me to take this by? If it's not a biblical issue and you want me to take it by faith outside of the Bible, how much sense does that make? That doesn't sound good to me. So anyway, he said, for evidence of Christ's divinity, that idea came to us in somewhat doubtful shape. But the system of Christianity was an ingenious one, at least. He's talking about this whole business about Christ and supposed to be. And perhaps it was calculated to do good. What he means is, maybe they meant good by coming up with that, saying, well, Jesus is God and all that. Maybe they intended well. He said, but can't prove it. And he said, he's not jumping on that bandwagon. He doesn't do that. So there you are. That's our remaining president that I said maybe. But actually, there is somewhat of a case there, isn't there? I would reserve a final judgment about this sixth president, Lincoln. I just wish we could find more something in his own writing or something he said specifically that we could track more directly. But we got a lot of information here that would say Lincoln was actually, would have been very comfortable with what we say and believed that quite directly. I think he would have been happy. And again, you could have talked with Lincoln, and he would probably have been very interested in what we're saying. Because apparently, really, he just said, Christ is not God. You know, that doesn't work. Well, that's all we're saying. That would give you two gods. How does that help anything? That makes no sense. Carrying on, I'm going to throw this in for free. I didn't even tell you this one was coming, but there is one more here, I think. And another individual that I say kind of slips through on us, and if we haven't been paying attention, maybe we missed it, but Benjamin Franklin. And I didn't include him in the title of the series because he never was our president. But he was probably more important to the development of our country than many of the presidents were. He was a great founding father of America. And here's what we know. This is another question. Maybe he was. He was not anyone who wrote or said anything much about his faith at all. These guys were trying to lead the people together as a nation, and Benjamin Franklin wasn't a preacher, and he knew that probably it would only break the confidence people had in him if he developed a religious discussion in the midst of all the political issues and so on that he was dealing with. So he didn't get into that. We talked about that with Jefferson also, certainly. But so he didn't have much to say about that. But here's a couple of things we do know about wonderful Ben Franklin. He was a personal friend of the Unitarian minister Joseph Priestley. Now, we talked about Joseph Priestley in our earlier sessions. Very important in all of this, wasn't he? That some of these knew Joseph Priestley personally, came from England and was a great one God preacher in England. And came to the United States. We talked about him some. Well, Franklin knew Priestley. If you knew Priestley, you knew these views about the one God. And Franklin actually went to church with Priestley some. I thought that was interesting, or at least know that much. And so you've got that kind of background then with Franklin and this great one God leader, Priestley, and who also, we touched on that too, Priestley, I think, had a little bit of a liberal bent too that we wouldn't exactly like. But on this business about the one God, he was unassailable. He was right on, and we have some of his writings that are great. The last thing we have on Franklin then, and we just read it a few minutes ago, but it might have slipped by you, is Howard Taft. And then the statement we read, let's read it again, and this time see if we can pick this up. So he said, it has promoted a spirit of tolerance because the Unitarian folks were tolerant themselves. He said, and friendly cooperation, it was not always so. Jefferson, though a sincere student of the teachings of Jesus and a Unitarian, was denounced as an atheist. By the way, there were people who denounced Lincoln as an atheist. Can you believe that? Politics have always been rugged, haven't they? Yeah. But anyway, we know the contumely, insult, and mob violence to which Priestley was subjected in England by good Christian people who burned his house down and burned his church down. Isn't that exciting? These were great days, weren't they? We think we have it rough sometimes. Boy, I mean, they were in it. But anyway, notice the next line. Franklin, the Adamses, and Fillmore were all Unitarian. Franklin, the Adamses, and Fillmore. So it's interesting then that William Howard Taft, in this address, lets us know, he says, yeah, Franklin was a Unitarian. So again, we don't have direct language from Franklin to be able to rely on. If you ever find any, let me know about Franklin or Lincoln. But they just didn't get into their religious lives in a public way at all. And we don't have any private letters from either one of them talking about these direct issues of faith that are of interest to us either. So there you go. So we got five, some of our most important presidents, by the way, five, maybe six, one God United States presidents. I think the maybe six could hold up. It may be very true. Lincoln, I think, at least knew what we believed, and it may have been his view. I really think it's very possible. And for bonus, we also get to throw in one other great founding father, and that is Benjamin Franklin. And we know he hung out with folks who believe this, as we do, regarding the one true God. So what do you think? Is that pretty good or what? Can you say amen? All right. I think we're just about out of time. One question? Anybody? Yes, please, George.
4 out of 5 were fairly outspoken regarding their faith. Judson, deigning not to bother defending himself.
Done. Right.
Were there Trinitarian presidents who were outspoken?
I haven't been studying on that question so much, but actually, I don't know of any who were big. I don't know of any. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting that there was, you'll see these things sometimes bandied around, you know, our state constitutions all talk about the Christian God and so on, and our United States Constitution, and that's all true, I think, in a sense. But if you begin to look at the United States Constitution, and you look at all the state constitutions, all 50 of them, I think, you will not find one of them, not one, I think. You can check me out, and if you find one, let me know. But I don't think you can find one of them that talks about the Trinity in that Constitution. So we talk about, even and same thing, you know, even with our Declaration of Independence. So we talk about all men are created equal, and we get this picture of God coming through, but not a three-person God in Jefferson's Declaration. Neither do we find it in the United States Constitution, though God is addressed there, and neither in all the 50 states. I haven't found any yet. I tried to read up on that. So one may slip on through on me, but not one case where the orthodox view of God is spoken of. In any of these constitutions, the view of God being multiple persons or two or three persons or something, it's just not there that I've ever found. And I've kind of checked that out. So it's interesting, isn't it? We could live with all these constitutions. We can live with the Bible. We're happy about all these things. What we can't live with is self-declared orthodoxy that changed the picture after the Bible was written. And that... we just don't believe it. Give us a better reason than these convoluted arguments that people come up with. Oh, I think it really was three persons who are one God. Really? You begin to look at it all and it just evaporates. Those are not good, solid thoughts, ideas, arguments. Every one of them are flawed. What do you think? Okay, my time is up. I have really enjoyed this series. Come if you can, if you want to hang with us. We're going to move into another series for September. And in September, we're going to talk about God's top priorities for you. What is God concerned about? God bless you all. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a few minutes for water. Oh, thank you. You're very kind. Thank you.